Wolves continue to thrive in the northern Rockies despite heavier hunting and trapping pressure. Good evening, I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce looks into an effort to help low-income Montanans lower their tax bill. And in our feature interview, news director Sally Mock talks with Democratic candidate Dirk Adams about his bid to become Montana's next U.S. Senator. A federally required annual wolf conservation and management report released today shows a total minimum number of 627 wolves counted in Montana at the end of 2013. That compares to 625 in 2012. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks spokesman Ron Ossheim says the word minimum in this case means that's the number of wolves officials can verify. He says there was a little bit of movement in terms of wolf pack numbers last year.
Packs were counted at 152 compared to 147 last year. Breeding pairs dropped from 37 to 28. The breeding pair is two adults and two pups, December 31st. It's assuming that's a male and a female. And then wolves are considered a pack when there are two wolves that have a territory for a year. So that's the difference between a breeding pair and a pack.
Ossheim says several factors may be behind Montana's relatively stable wolf population.
We took 230 wolves in the hunting season and the trapping season, and that makes a difference. There were 78 wolves taken as a result of depredation this year, and that's down, by the way, from last year. And perhaps they're getting to the point, and we don't know, maybe they are getting to a point where they're in balance with the available prey and the tolerance that we have. Maybe it's making a difference that maybe we're reducing the number of breeding pairs by some of this control action. Those are questions we're going to continue to address. For now, it does look like those things have leveled off a little bit.
He says livestock depredations continue to decline.
This year was a seven-year low for livestock, for cattle. We went from 67 reported livestock cattle depredations last year to 50, and from 37 sheep to 24. We have been targeting packs and individual wolves that have been depredating on livestock. And when you do that, either take out whole packs or reduce the size of the pack and maybe convince them that it's not a good idea to be around livestock.
Ossheim says livestock producers are also taking more measures to protect their animals from wolf attacks. Idaho's minimum for 2013 stood at 659, compared to 683 in 2012. Wyoming's 2013 minimum wolf count was 306, compared to 277 in 2012.
And in other news from around the state, a Montana judge sentenced a Washington State man to life in prison without parole for killing and dismembering his 3-year-old son last summer. District Judge Lauren Tucker went beyond prosecutors' recommendations that 38-year-old Jeremy Kramer be eligible for parole after 30 years in the Montana State Prison. Tucker said today that the butchery demanded the full extent of punishment allowed by law. Kramer pleaded guilty in December to deliberate homicide. Broderick Kramer's body was found in a field south of Anaconda last July. Witnesses testified for the first time that Kramer bashed the boy's head in with a rock, which likely killed him.
A 14-year-old boy from Dublin, California, faces 6 charges in youth court after 3 bomb threats were made against Montana schools 2 weeks ago. KTVH-TV reports the boy is charged in Alameda County District Court as a delinquent youth facing 3 counts of terrorist threats and 3 counts of false report of a bomb. Lewis and Clark County prosecutors filed youth court charges against the boy on March 21st. Police Chief Troy McGee says California is entitled to prosecute him first. A 16-year-old Helena Capital student faces 2 felony intimidation charges in youth court for allegedly conspiring with a California teen on 2 of the bomb threats. The threats led to the evacuation of Helena Elementary and Middle Schools on March 19th and all public schools on March 21st.
Federal wildlife officials say a silver and copper mine proposed for northwestern Montana won't harm grizzly bears or other threatened or endangered species in the area. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services on Monday issued its final biological opinion on the proposed Montanore silver-copper project located about 17 miles south of Libby. Spokane, Washington-based Mines Management Incorporated has been working to permit the mine since 2005. Permitting consultant Eric Klemper says he expects the preliminary environmental impact statement to be completed in June and a final record of decision by late this year. The plan calls for surface operations just outside Cabinet Mountain Wilderness Area with drilling underneath. The USFWS says the mine could lead to the loss of one federally protected grizzly bear, but required mitigation will make up for the loss.
Northwestern Energy has an agreement to build a new $23 million Montana headquarters building in Butte. The Butte Silver Bow Council of Commissioners approved a plan Wednesday for the company to build at the corner of Park and Main Streets. The area of trees, grass, and parking lots at the site is owned by the county. Under the agreement, Northwestern will try to find a buyer for the buildings it currently occupies. The county would have 18 months to explore options with the building if Northwestern is unable to sell or dispose of it. Pat Corcoran, Northwestern's Vice President of Government and Regulatory Affairs, says the agreement means construction will begin soon. The new building will be more energy efficient and smaller than the company's old building.
Elected officials in the Helena area are trying to remind people about their options for reducing their state property taxes. Those opportunities exist for veterans, elderly, and people of low income. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce says leaders are looking to educate at the local food share.
Visitors to the Helena Food Share line up well before the doors open at 12:30. When the lock flips,
come on in.
The process moves quickly. People down on their luck, or without much money, they check in and pull out a cart or a basket. People like John, who declined to give his last name.
Well, I'm retired, and I'm on Social Security.
He holds a laminated green card. It allows him to make weekly visits here.
I think I'm going to get this pita stuff, some bread.
He moves between racks holding baked goods, another with vegetables, a cooler with dairy products and juice.
Yeah, these are pretty good.
This is all free for John, who brings in about $9,000 a year through Social Security. He is a homeowner, though.
It's a one-bedroom house that I built over the top of my garage.
And so he'll have property taxes to pay. Lewis and Clark County Commissioner Susan Good-Giese says the state initially taxes John's home the same regardless of his income.
They don't care if you have any income to pay for it. If you own property, you're still taxed on it. That's why this program is so important.
Good-Giese is helping property owners at the food share fill out a form for the Property Tax Assistance Program.
Forms are really simple. People could actually fill them out themselves.
Good-Giese recently joined together with Lewis and Clark County's other elected women to form a group they're calling the Elected Women's Caucus. Spreading awareness about these property tax forms is one of their projects. People can get up to 80% of their property taxes waived on the first $100,000 of their property, depending on how much money they make. The Property Tax Assistance Program for low-income residents and disabled veterans has been around since 1979. Another program providing income tax assistance to elderly homeowners or renters was passed in 81. They're valid across the state, but Good-Giese says some still need to hear the message.
Sometimes these wonderful programs are just not known to people. They just don't know about them.
John says he has one of the forms. He's going to come back to the food share to work on it some other time. Looking at the form, he's eligible for a 50% cut on his property taxes.
That's like a good $500 savings, yeah.
I'm thinking, where am I going to come up with the money to pay the taxes?
Jackie lives in Boulder. Coming to the food share is a fairly new thing for her. Just in the last year, she and her husband owned a cafe.
We lost our business. My husband's sick and can no longer work.
And she's raising a teenage son. She says her property taxes aren't very much. They live in a prefabricated house on land they don't own. But she says she'll look at the property tax assistance form. Any little bit helps.
Yeah, it does. Anything helps.
The deadline for filling out these assistance forms is the same as the overall tax filing deadline, April 15th. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
And check out our website for links to those property tax assistance forms. That's mtpr.org.
Yellowstone National Park is fighting online rumors that running bison seen in a YouTube video are fleeing a possible explosion in the park's supervolcano. The video was posted on March 20th, 10 days before a magnitude 4.8 earthquake hit, the park's strongest quake in 30 years. Yellowstone posted a video of its own this week, noting that it's normal for wildlife to move around to find food at lower elevations that isn't covered by snow at this time of year. Park spokesman Al Nash says there are no signs to suggest that the volcano is about to erupt. Although the YouTube video says the animals are leaving, park spokesman Dan Hoddle told the Jackson Hole Daily that they are actually running toward the park's interior and the volcano.
Born in Nebraska, educated at Harvard with stints as a New York trial jury attorney, California banker and now Montana rancher Dirk Adams of Wilsall wants to be Montana's next U.S. Senator. The political newcomer Adams is running against former Lieutenant Governor John Bollinger and recently appointed Senator John Walsh in the June Democratic primary. In this feature interview, Adam talks with News Director Sally Mock about his background, why he's running, and his stance on the issues.
How long have you been a full-time resident of Montana? I know you've had the ranch since 84.
I've been a full-time resident of Montana since about 1992.
Because I thought you worked for some banks.
I have various times worked for banks or mortgage banks in various places, but I always flew home.
My question was, how long have you been a full-time resident where you didn't live anywhere else but Montana?
Well, I think that is being a full-time resident of Montana.
Even though you were working in Minnesota and California?
Yeah. I mean, I always came home. I paid resident income taxes here.
How much of the year were you here?
Well, a lot of the time that I worked in these jobs, I worked from Montana. And so I would periodically fly from Montana to an office or location outside of Montana. But a lot of the time I worked in Montana.
And why do you want to be the next U.S. Senator from Montana? You've not run for political office before, I don't believe.
That's correct. When I looked at what was going on in July of this past year, I felt like the candidate for whom the runway was being cleared.
Mr. Walsh.
John Walsh. I couldn't see him beating Steve Daines. And I thought we needed a strong progressive who had a variety of experience, life experiences and business experiences and job skills to beat Steve Daines. And I didn't think John Walsh was that guy. I'm running because I think the objective of the Democrats is to win this Senate race. And I think I'm more qualified to take Steve Daines on than John Walsh.
And do you think Montanans as a whole are progressive in their views? You think a progressive can win a Senate seat?
Yes, I do. I think it's a matter of folks understanding that a progressive is really somebody who wants to conserve human health and intellect and also wants to conserve the environment. And therefore, in the best Teddy Roosevelt tradition, is really a conservative.
Let's talk about some of those environmental issues. You oppose the Keystone XL pipeline. Tell me why.
I oppose the pipeline because it's nothing more than an arbitrage between $50 a barrel oil in Alberta and $100 a barrel oil in Port Arthur, Texas. And it's not necessary for energy security. What's going on in the Bakken is sufficient for U.S. energy security. So what we're asking is for Montanans to take a risk with the pipeline for basically foreign arbitrageurs. And I just don't think it's worth the risk.
You support what's going on in the Bakken?
I think that oil and gas development in the Bakken is a good thing. I worry because I come from the Beaumont-Port Arthur region of Texas. I worry an awful lot about whether we're on top of the messes that get made by the oil and gas industry and whether we're being tough enough on controlling the environmental dangers. But yes, I support oil and gas development in the Bakken.
And what about the impact of fossil fuels on climate change?
I'm very concerned about the impact of fossil fuels on climate change. That's the reason I said coal is dead. That's the reason I've wanted to talk about climate change for a long time. And I've been pretty clear that coal as a future fossil as a future energy source is just not a good idea for a lot of different reasons.
Coal brings a ton of revenue into Montana state coffers. How would you replace that revenue if coal ceased being something that was developed in Montana?
So, first of all, coal is going to cease being developed in Montana. This isn't
because of the market.
Because there is simply no ongoing market for coal. So the state of Montana needs to develop different revenue sources and needs not to develop a reliance on coal. So the answer to how would we replace those revenues, I think, is a more complicated question than I can probably answer right this moment.
Give it a shot.
Okay. I would say that we probably ought to increase taxes on oil and gas and not give them the tax holiday they have. And I would say that otherwise we need to look at reduced expenses.
You are pro-choice and you're pro-gay marriage.
Yes, I am. My mother founded Southeast Texas Family Planning in 1962. And that was about birth control. It's how it started out, birth control pills. And here we are 52 years later still having the same conversations, which I think is about 47 years too long.
There's a lot of debate in this country, as you know, about health care and whether the Affordable Care Act was or was not a good idea. You're okay with the Affordable Care Act. You're not okay with how it was rolled out.
Well, who can be okay with the way it was rolled out? But I support the Affordable Care Act, and I think folks should do that. We should do what Governor Schweitzer suggested, which is go on to single payer
and have universal health care, pretty much.
Yes, yes. I think it's going to turn out to be a whole lot less expensive than the alternative, which is lots of people without health care insurance.
You also are a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. What do you think about background checks, universal background checks?
I think that the background check issue is going to be moot in a year or two. I think the background checks that are currently conducted are fine. I'm not for expanding them, and I'm for facing up to the fact that anybody within a couple of years that has a printer is going to have a gun. And so we're not going to
because of the 3D.
The 3D
technology.
Printing, yes. And so I think technology is changing things and that the argument about gun control is about to have a dramatic shift.
Is that good or bad in your opinion?
You know, I the answer is I don't know, but I think we need to start talking about it so we can figure out what the good policy positions are.
In the meantime, why are you opposed to universal background checks?
I'm opposed to universal background checks because I think the real problem is mental health challenges that folks face. And I don't think that the president or the government has stepped up to their responsibilities with regard to better mental health. I think background checks are not a particularly effective remedy, particularly when a lot of the mental health challenges that are faced by folks in this country don't get recorded someplace in connection with the background check.
We'll talk a little bit about the horse race now. There's a quote from a Gallatin County Democratic official who said this about you. He said, "He seems like a friendly enough guy, but in my mind, he's just a banker who's got a little too much time on his hands right now."
Well, I didn't have too much time on my hands, and the young man that made that quotation has since apologized for it as a mischaracterization.
You do have a background in, I think you were a trial attorney in New York.
Yes.
You also taught briefly at the business school here at the University of Montana.
For 2 years.
And then you went into the banking industry and were a banker in Minnesota and California, among other places. Part of the criticism of your candidacy is that some of those banks failed and that you had some part to play and what were the reasons for those failures?
Well, so first of all, you skipped over the fact that I was a senior bank regulator on the West Coast for about 4 years. And so I'm keenly aware of the regulatory opportunities and responsibilities. And second, one of the banks that I was involved in failed, only one.
The one in Minnesota.
The one in Minnesota, Home Savings. And it was a very sad and wrenching experience for me and for my employees. But we were one of 1,000 community banks that failed because the mortgage market collapsed, which was caused by Wall Street speculation in home mortgages. We did not make subprime mortgages, and we did not make loans to people with bad credit.
But the federal regulators did question the bank's practices with its adjustable rate mortgages.
Well, I was following a business plan that I laid out before we bought the bank and that the regulators insisted I follow. and they never gave me permission to vary from that business plan, and I followed it to a T.
I do want to ask you also, now Senator Walsh is certainly the front runner because he's known in Montana and because he is a sitting senator now. How do you buck that?
Well, I think that folks know how Senator Walsh got his position. I think that folks understand what John Walsh's resume looks like, and I think they understand how shaky his commitment is to the environment. And
what's your evidence of that?
Well, he favored. Have you been to his website?
Yep.
Okay, so you've noticed then that the word environment doesn't appear anywhere on his website, and you've noticed that the words climate change don't appear anywhere on his website, and you've noticed that he's never said publicly anything about climate change, but that he is an advocate of extended and increased coal development, and that he's an advocate for the Trans-Canada pipeline, and that he has taken money from every polluter in America as part of his campaign, including British Petroleum, Canada, Exxon, Mobil, and the Chinese National Petroleum Company.
You bring up the issue of money. His war chest, I'm guessing, is considerably bigger than yours. How do you buck someone who has name recognition in the state, and you're trying to get it between now and June 3rd, and has way more money to spend? How do you beat those odds?
It's always interesting to me when folks ask me about money, and then they turn around and ask me about Citizens United. And it seems to me that you can run a campaign in Montana for a lot less than all the money in the world. And that's what I intend to do.
And win a U.S. Senate seat.
Absolutely. If you can't, what does that say about our democracy?
Well, I have been speaking with Dirk Adams, who is one of three Democratic candidates for the U.S. Senate, the other being John Bollinger and John Walsh. Mr. Adams, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate your time.
Glad to do it. Thank you.
Now for this weekend's forecast. West of the Divide tonight should be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and snow, with lows in the mid-20s to lower 30s. Tomorrow calls for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and snow showers, and high should be in the mid-40s to lower 50s. On Sunday, rain showers are likely. Snow is also likely in the morning, and there's a slight chance of snow showers in the afternoon and evening. Expect highs in the upper 40s to mid-50s. In central Montana tonight, it should be mostly cloudy, with isolated rain showers and some scattered snow through the night as well. Expect lows 30 to 35 degrees. Tomorrow, look for increasing clouds with a chance of snow showers through the day. There's a slight chance of rain in the afternoon, and highs should be 45 to 55 degrees. On Sunday, it should be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and snow showers. Expect highs 45 to 55 degrees. Wind gusts could reach up to 50 miles per hour. In southwest Montana, tonight it calls for mostly cloudy skies with scattered rain and snow showers and lows 25 to 35 degrees. Tomorrow, look for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of snow showers through the day. There's also a chance of rain showers in the afternoon with highs 45 to 55 degrees. On Sunday, it should be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and snow. Expect highs in the 40s and wind gusts could reach up to 40 miles per hour. And now for the editorial comments of Dr. Tom Roberts.
We've come to the end of the first enrollment period for individuals obtaining health insurance through the online marketplace, which is part of the Affordable Care Act. It's appropriate now to consider what we've seen and what we've learned. I'll point out just a few of the more important issues, but of course, this is all quite complicated, and I'm just touching the surface. Over 7 million people nationally have now signed up for private health insurance through both the federal and state-run online exchanges. These sites are also referred to as health insurance marketplaces. An additional 6 million people are newly signed up for Medicaid. Many people remain confused about the Affordable Care Act. 6 out of 10 people nationally who qualify for subsidies to purchase health insurance are unaware of that fact, even now. Many people who are against Obamacare are actually in favor of the Affordable Care Act, which is, of course, the same thing. Confusion and a lack of understanding is worse in states where politicians have been actively opposed to anything related to the Affordable Care Act, places like Texas, Mississippi, and Louisiana. Of course, those states have far lower rates of people signing up for insurance through the exchange. These states are also the least likely to have expanded Medicaid, and so are not providing insurance coverage to poor people. Montana, as many of us know, also did not choose to provide health insurance coverage to poor people using federal dollars. A ballot initiative, or possibly a special session of our legislature, could change this. Arkansas and a few other states have found ways to use the available federal dollars to expand health insurance options to these mostly working poor, while still responding to Republican concerns. The same approaches are available to us here in Montana as well, but we have to develop it ourselves. A little more than 30,000 people here in Montana have signed up for individual health insurance through the federally run marketplace. These are individuals with family incomes above 100% of the federal poverty level. How many of these people were previously uninsured is not known. Estimates are that up to 200,000 Montanans did not have health insurance in 2013, so we know that most of these folks today remain without insurance. How to reach these people, educate them, and get them involved in buying appropriate health care coverage, even at a very low cost, remains a significant challenge. Many people who had expensive or high deductible policies in 2013 have been able to purchase more comprehensive health insurance at a lower cost on the exchange. Likewise, there are some people who are now paying more for coverage that they may not feel they need. There are winners as well as some losers in this new market, as expected. New options and choices are available not only for individuals, but also for small businesses. Even some large businesses can benefit from putting their employees on the marketplace and raising salaries to cover the costs. Those companies with a high percentage of low-income employees may be in the best position to see significant savings by giving up employer-based health insurance. It's also clear that this program will continue to be a political football. Our collective concerns and fears about the government's role, healthcare costs, and insurance companies' profits will continue to be linked to Obamacare in an attempt to gain political advantage. Ongoing court cases and legislative maneuvering will fan these flames as well. Bad news will still sell better than good news. Viable alternatives to the ACA are not really being developed. We've seen that it's easier to be critical than to do the hard work of providing workable solutions. Not all that happens with healthcare is related to changes brought about by the Affordable Care Act. Insurance premiums are on the rise, though perhaps at a slower rate, because spending on healthcare continues to climb. New technologies applied to an aging population, as well as our unhealthy culture and lifestyle, means it will spend more, no matter how much we change the structure of health insurance. And we will continue to see significant changes in the organization of healthcare and of health insurance in our state. A for-profit hospital chain is coming to Missoula, and the largest insurer in the state is a multi-billion dollar company based in Illinois. More and more doctors are hospital employees. Primary care and prevention continue to be underfunded relative to potential benefit. It's all very complicated. As a Chinese curse says, may you live in interesting times. Thanks for listening. This is Dr. Tom Roberts.
Dr. Tom Roberts is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Valentine. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.